Thanks very much to Gavin Riley for looking after things for the last couple of days on The Last Word while I've been here in London. And the reason I've been here in London, well, we're doing the show from London this evening. We've lots of great guests for you to meet. But I suppose the real reason why we decided to come over to London is because next month they're having a referendum here on what is a very, very important issue. Now, you might say, look, you know, it's a British referendum. What's that got to do with us? In fact, there's probably a lot of British people saying, what does the damn referendum really mean to us anyway? But they're deciding whether to leave the European Union or not. And if they do leave the European Union, there could be major repercussions for Ireland. An awful lot of uncertainties. There could be things that will go well. There could be things that go wrong. But these are things that are perhaps worth teasing out and finding why it is that the British may want to isolate themselves from Europe. So we've lots of great guests for you to meet on The Last Word this evening. You're very welcome to the programme. But it's not all going to be about Brexit. Far from it. We're actually going to have some music. We're going to have a sample answer and Gavin James with us. We're also going to be meeting Annie Mack. In fact, we're meeting lots of Irish people who are doing well over here in Britain. Joe O'Shea, Vogue Williams, Jarlett Regan will also be joining us. And we'll also be meeting controversial characters like Katie Hopkins and George Galloway. And then Nick Ferrari will be joining us, familiar to you, of course, from all his contributions to the programme over the years. Nick will be joining us in studio as well. So we've lots of great guests for you to meet on the programme. Joe O'Shea, very familiar to you on this programme many times over the years, less so recently since he moved over to London. How long ago is it now?
About 2.5 years, Matt.
Was that around the time that President Michael D. Higgins visited?
It was, actually. That happened very shortly after you arrived. And that was a big, big event, as everybody remembers. There was a huge concert in the Albert Hall. And that was an exciting time to be Irish in London, actually.
There are so many Irish in London. This is one of the things, I suppose, which is relevant as well to this Brexit referendum vote. 500,000 Irish people with the eligibility to vote. But lots of them are people who've come across, like yourself, in recent years to escape the recession back in Ireland, many of whom, it seems, don't know that they're entitled to vote in this referendum.
Well, I'm registered and I voted in the last general election as well, and I voted for Sadiq Khan in the mayoral election. Just to give you one figure, after the 5 years after the crash, 90,000 Irish people moved across the Irish Sea. So that's the population of Galway City, plus 15,000 more from the county. A lot of them are in London, and most of them are young, very well educated, very well travelled. And when you travel around London on the tube, when you go into a pub, when you go into a restaurant, wherever you go in London, you're going to hear Irish accents. It absolutely knocked me out when I came over here first. I couldn't believe how many Irish people I was meeting and how many Irish people I knew, you know, old school friends or friends that I would have lost touch with over the years who are in London.
You were probably slightly older, though, than most of the people who came over.
Yeah, oh yes. I mean, like, I'm in my mid-40s now. Most of the people you meet here are Irish. They're 23 to 35. They're all usually well-educated, college degrees. They're working at very high levels. See, I was here at the end of the 80s, right? I did the traditional thing. You finish your leaving cert, you get on the boat, you go to London, you work for a while, you make some money, you go back and you go to college. And London then, and the London Irish then, and the London Irish today is a world of difference.
In what way?
Back in the 80s, you came over, most people came over, and you met guys who came in the 50s and 60s, and they were working on the site. So they were working on the tube, but they were working all over the city. But you were happy to get a place to live, a roof over your head, and a job. Any job, as long as you had, you could make a bit of money and pay for yourself and live in London. And you probably lived in Kilburn or Cricklewood, the Irish ghettos as they were at the time. You meet people today now, it's a completely different scene. They don't come over with their hand out. You know, they come over and they say, I'm well educated, I'm well travelled, I know the world, I've got skills, you need to employ me because I have something to offer you. So you meet people who are confident, they're working in IT, they're working in the city, in banks, they're working in the media, they're working, the hospitality industry is very, very Irish. You still meet guys who are working on the sites, but they're not working, you know, with shovels in their hands anymore. They're quantity surveyors, they're site foremen, they're project managers. You know, people like Murphy, for instance, the huge Irish construction company that was built up by a guy who came over in the 50s with not a lot of money, built into a huge, one of the biggest construction companies in England. They are one of the main contractors on the Crossrail project, which is this multi-billion pounds, you know, new Crossrail underground system running through London. Murphy are one of the main contractors. And I've met Murphy guys who are Irish guys, young Irish guys, and they're qualified in Ireland. The building trade, as we all know, collapsed. They came over and now they're working on Crossrail or they're working on one of the big, huge projects around the city.
How long are you over here now?
I'm 3 years here.
Are you settled in London?
I would consider myself pretty settled here, all right.
Why?
Well, my son's in school. That'll be the first foremost. He started school in September. And
that's often when people decide to come back when the children start school.
True.
That's when they decide to go back to Ireland.
I think it's one of the key times, one of the key questions for us was, well, how far do you want to put them through school here? Because we'd always hoped to come back. And I think our idea is secondary school over here is pretty rough and raw. And anyone over here will tell you the experiences a lot of people have in secondary school over here, particularly as someone who's slightly different, aren't often that good. So our plan is always to come back and do secondary school in Ireland. But I mean, that's 7 years away. I'm here 3 years now. So I'm very happy here.
Will you be voting in the referendum?
I will, of course. I'll be campaigning door to door to make sure they don't leave the thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Why so?
Well, I think that anybody who grew up in Ireland in the 90s will know exactly how good Europe has been to us and how many positives came out of our membership of Europe and how when things do hit the fan, unity is really important. Yeah. We're looking at a property bubble here that, you know, they haven't fully internalized yet. I live in a
100% mortgages, you know, they're doing
exactly
the things that we do.
The crazy I live in St. Albans, which is just north of London. And in the time that I've lived there, the house prices have jumped 40% in 3 years. So
had
I feel a little bit
had
like...
you bought?
Yeah, I feel a bit like David McWilliams here. but that's a colossal bubble. And there isn't a person there who has for a moment said, you know, I never hear bubble mentioned.
Fogg, are you taking an interest in the referendum debate? Will you vote?
Yeah, I will vote. I think I'm going to vote the same as you, Jarlath. For the same reasons, and just because I think Europe is a great thing to be a part of. I mean, you've got the no reasons. I heard Katie Hopkins again going on about the
She's coming on with us later on the programme.
She's really, really nice when you meet her in real life.
I'm looking forward to it. I'll put aside all the preconceptions and I'll take your recommendation.
Yeah. But she is talking just about the immigration and stuff like that. I just think it's a good idea to stay and I will be voting to stay.
Are you a fan of Boris Johnson?
I'm a massive Boris fan. I think he's brilliant.
Why? Is he not a complete and utter spoofer who, when his job as the Telegraph's Brussels correspondent, just made up all these myths which misled the British people as to what really goes on in Europe and has now continued in his role? I mean, even this week, I mean, even you probably wouldn't have come out. Even you probably wouldn't have come out with that line about the European Union being like Hitler in the Third Reich.
That's just been taken out of context.
How was it taken out of context?
Because he's talking about people that have tried to take over Europe. Hitler was one of them. Europe does want to be a super state. It looks to suck us into that super state. I don't think we should be part of that. And that's the simple point.
What super state? What's this conspiracy theory that you're trying to peddle?
It's not a conspiracy theory. It's just that I don't necessarily want to be governed by Europe. I don't want people to have free access to my country. I don't want to give X million Turkish people
visa. Hold on, what do you mean? Hold on. People free access to your country.
Visa-free travel into the UK and Europe. I don't want that to happen. I'm not interested in being part of Europe. Never have been. And I've never had a say. I was born in 1975. I know, unbelievable. But I've never had a say on Europe.
So you're an isolationist. You're an isolationist. You just want to be yourselves alone.
Well, that's your label. I mean, I would say I'm a proud British citizen and I think we can be greater on our own. And it doesn't mean, you know, we had Angelina Jolie crooning all over our British Broadcasting Corporation that if your neighbour's house is on fire, you can't just lock the door. But I tell you what, if there were 15 migrants in the house next door, a lock wouldn't even do it, would it? We've seen their behaviour in Germany. We've seen what their behaviour has been like on New Year's Eve, for example.
Have you not seen the behaviour that you often get of people of all nationalities? British people do dreadful things to British people at home, just in the way dreadful things happened in Germany on New Year's Eve.
Well, I think you can blame, you know, there's an app now in Germany to teach migrants about things like sexual culture in Europe, the fact that women aren't actually just cooks with an extra handy hole.
Would you think, would that be useful for certain British males as well? That they might do well to actually learn some of those things?
Well, the British men I've met, and believe me, I've met many, have always been courteous, chivalrous. They open doors for me. They offer me their seats. I've been married to quite a few of them as well, and they've always treated me with the greatest respect. So I'd much rather be married to a British man than a migrant.
Okay, foreigners.
I don't know why you're sticking up for these people.
Foreigners
anyway.
Coming to, look,
is
at
it
London.
Sure, a migrant?
One third of the people who live in London are foreign.
Well, you
isn't it a wonderful
three
city?
Is that an Irish way of doing a third? Three fingers?
Well, maybe I'll get rid of one and then wave it at you.
But one third.
Tell me, though, one third of the people in London
right.
are foreign?
Right.
And isn't this a wonderful city?
That's too
don't
many
you love
already.
It? That's
no.
too many.
So for me, multiculturalism has been rammed down our throats with a battering rod. And just because we live in London, we're supposed to be massively into multiculturalism. I think multiculturalism has failed. Actually, if you took time, but you're not going to look round our city, you'd see that actually what we have is ghettos. Ghettos of Somalis, ghettos of Polish people, ghettos of people from elsewhere. We aren't actually multicultural. We're just ghettos of different
that's
cultures.
That's the way people used to talk about the
that.
Irish in
well,
this
that's
country.
That's the way our city is if you look beyond on the BBC. And unfortunately, there are places in the UK I wouldn't walk. There are places I wouldn't go. There's places where if I did have hair, which admittedly I don't anymore, you know, I'd be spat at and told to cover my hair up. That's in my country.
Would that
not
also be
enough.
By English people?
No,
have you,
have
you never been abused by English people?
Never.
Never?
No one messes with the Hopkins, not even you, honey bunny.
Nobody in Britain, no English person has ever
no,
spoken to you
I know it's
way.
A nice idea that perhaps I'd be hated, the most hated woman, the biggest bitch in Britain, da-da-da-da-da. But actually what I find on the streets is there's a lot of support. I think a lot of people see that I help push back the walls of the things we're no longer allowed to say. And for many people, I just simply articulate views that they have but feel that they can't say or don't want to have the backlash that I get.
Okay, so if you had Britain out of the European Union, okay, so would that then, as far as you're concerned, stop immigration to the country? Would you deport people from this country for not being British?
I'd build a wall and I'd make them pay for it.
Oh, well, you might need a wall because you're on an island. But you might need the wall between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland.
That's why I love the English Channel. I think that's done us the biggest favour. So when Angelina Jolie is wittering on about if your neighbour's house is on fire, you can't just lock the door. But the brilliant thing that we have, of course, is the English Channel. So we have water between us and the place in Europe that's on fire, which is Germany. I don't want to be governed over by Merkel, who has terrible dress sense, but also a terrible sense of humour. I don't want to be governed by anybody in Europe who hasn't been democratically elected, I will point out as well. And I don't need to be told what to do. I don't need to be told that someone has human rights, which means they can stay in our country after they've committed crimes. And I don't need to be told that our laws can be superseded by some European nonsense laws.
What about the Irish in Britain? Where would the Irish stand as members of the European Union? If Britain leaves the European Union, what would happen to Irish people coming to Britain?
Well, you can do what you want. I don't have a particular problem with Irish people. I have a particular
but we're
problem.
Foreigners.
I have a particular, well, you said it, but I have a particular problem with Turkish people going to be given a 90-day visa, even though they're not part of Europe. They don't meet the standard we require. They're going to receive a visa. They're going to receive that and we're going to be part of that. I have a problem paying for other people's children living in other people's countries when I'm working hard and paying my taxes to contribute to that. I don't actually want to give £12 billion to aid either. I don't want, I'd cut the foreign aid budget tomorrow and I'd look after British people first. That's just my mentality and I'm proud of it. I'm not going to back down.
Can I ask a final question? No, I'm going to ask you, do you really believe the things you say or do you just say them for effect?
That would be very shallow. That would have lasted about 2 seconds. So if you just say something for effect, you can not back it up. You can't really speak about it with any credibility. Anything I've said, you could go back and find me saying the same thing before, no doubt.
You're consistent.
Not that I'm consistent, just that I believe what I say. And I think what's surprising for people and what people can't really handle is the idea that you've got a woman saying a lot of the things that a lot of people think. And that's why I regularly get hauled into police cells, interviewed under caution. The head of the UN says Katie Hopkins is responsible for genocide because people try and shut me up. But as yet, no one succeeded.
George Galloway, good evening to you.
And to you.
George, I suppose a lot of people would think of you as somebody who would be very much multicultural in his position, and yet we hear you're on the leave side, so you're effectively going to be on the same side of all the people who are anti-immigration.
Well, I was always on the side of Tony Benn, and I think he was probably the acme of progressive politics in Britain. He's my political, spiritual father, and until his last breath, he was arguing that Britain should leave the European Union, not for the reasons that have just been adumbrated. Of course, I am myself an immigrant twice over, from Ireland and then from Scotland. I like immigration. If immigration was a bad thing, America would be the poorest country in the world and Bangladesh would be the richest. So for me, it's nothing to do with immigration. It is to do with democracy. It is to do with being able to remove the people that make vital decisions that affect your life. And we can remove David Cameron. Heaven knows we need to do it as quickly as we can. But we cannot remove the European Union. As the people of Greece found three times last year, the people you elect are not the people who make the biggest decisions about what's going to happen in your life. And now half of all the children in Greece are hungry, literally hungry, as a result of the decisions made by the ruthless banker's ramp, which is the EU.
For radio, what way do you see things going with people's music habits? I just see it even with my kids at times as well, is that they're not really listening to music, they're sort of watching it on YouTube.
Yeah.
What do you make of that?
I mean, that's the scary truth, isn't it? You know, you're not going to buy a 10-year-old kid a radio for their birthday, are you? I mean, it's just not done anymore. So, you know, kids...
You've now persuaded me what my 10-year-old is getting for his next birthday.
And your 10-year-old is not going to be impressed. He's going to be like, what's this, Dad? A wireless. A what? It's just about, you know, multi-platform now. So it's kind of ways of reaching a young audience who are used to consuming everything on their phone, and ways of being creative and making things from radio, like, you know, visual content and podcasts and kind of radio on demand, which is such a big part of what I do now. And, you know, everything that we do in the show, if there's anything that stands out, we'll clip it up so you can experience the radio in small fragments. So you don't have to listen to back to 2 hours of the show. You can listen to a 5-minute interview or a 5-minute mix or that kind of thing. That stuff is really, really important.
But is that sort of damage, for many people, maybe it's an older generation, sort of the magic of radio, the thing even of sitting in for a couple of hours, particularly if you're a student, whatever, you're studying, you have the music on in the background, rather than the sort of bitty pieces here and there and constantly searching for things rather than having it provided for you?
I think it's about the way you consume it. You know, if you're 14, you're going to appreciate being able to listen to the five minutes that you want to listen to. But the majority of people in the UK still listen to the radio in their cars at home as something that is always there in the background, the old radio as a friend thing. So that's kind of comforting to me to know that, you know, Radio 1, the station that I'm on, is still very much listened to terrestrially. But for us, as a radio station that focuses on young people, we have to be able to cater to their needs, and that's what we're doing now. And I think moving forwards, it's good to have that infrastructure in place, because it's only going to get more and more that way, I think.
Will you be doing more work with other voices than Philip King?
I hope so. Yeah, I did it last year and I really enjoyed it. It was really nice to co-host with Hugh Stevens, who's a colleague of mine on Radio 1. And yeah, I love going back there. I don't work in Ireland much, so it's really nice to go back and just work with Irish people. Seems like a very basic thing, but...
And Dingle is also one of the best places in Ireland to go to for anything, particularly if you enjoy a night out.
Yeah, it's incredible. And also just seeing that breadth of music in that shorter time, it's kind of like going to a festival and getting to see every band that you want to see. You know, you come away, you know, just full of amazing music. It's a great experience.
Britain has been really good to you, hasn't it? It's given you an enormous amount of opportunities to do things as you want to do.
Yeah, it has actually. I moved to Britain initially because I wanted to do a course in radio, and the only one I could find at the time was just outside London, and I had a brother in London as well. So I moved there kind of, you know, in that old-fashioned way to seek my fortune. And also Radio 1, BBC Radio 1, when I heard it, was the station that I had kind of focused on as the, you know, the kind of echelons of where I wanted to be. I've been very lucky there. London has treated me well, and I'm really happy there. I like London.
It's an enormous escape valve, isn't it, for an awful lot of Irish people over the generations, particularly the last 5 years as well, as we've had our economic meltdown. So many people have come over to work here in London. And do you find for Irish people it's now a much more welcoming place than perhaps previous generations have said it was?
I can imagine it was. You know, one of the first places I moved to in London was Kilburn, you know, which is that kind of
traditional move for an Irish person.
Yeah,
to go to Kilburn.
So cliche. I had no idea, but I just got to move there and then was like, what are all these Irish pubs doing here? And then I realised the kind of the history of it. But yeah, I can imagine back in the day it wasn't as kind to Irish people as it is now. But I do feel, you know, I like being an Irish person in the UK. People have a lot of affection and a lot of warmth for Irish people here. And I've lived in London for 17 years, which is as long as I've lived in Dublin, which is terrifying. But so, I mean, I'm never going to call myself British, but I had a weird incident actually yesterday where my kid is starting his preschool and we had to put in his ethnicity. And I was like, where's the Irish? And my boyfriend was like, he's British. He was born in London. And he's got an Irish mom and an English dad. So what does that make him? And I was like, what? He's not British. He's half Irish. But there's nowhere that you could write half Irish, of course.
Maybe you'd have to compromise with European. Of course, that mightn't work after the referendum next month.
Let's hope so.